You're listening to the Boxing Coalition.
And he just broke the guy's heart. The guy had nothing left, and he knew he couldn't last another 4 or 5 rounds.
Ricky Barnes just smashed his soul.
Put it in, let's get it.
Fuck that, this your chest, nigga. You hear
let's
me?
Let's get it!
Go kick his motherfucker!
Get that motherfucker in!
Let's see if you do this. Little step back, 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 back. Little step back, back, back.
Back, back, back. Back, back, back. Try and stop it. Back.
Body shot. Boom, 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 boom. Go to the body. Kill that body. You took his nuts, now you gotta take his heart.
Yeah, take his whole soul away.
Gail, get out of here, Gail. I'll see you later. Why you still look credible? Get out of here.
He was higher than a motherfucker. I'll tell you, he was stoned as fuck.
No, it's only a majority decision if there was an even score. There's no even score here. You're an official, right? You're an official of the state. Well, then you don't understand how to score.
Oh, my God!
Unbelievable! The crowd here on Fuego!
He's ready to be whooped, man. He's ready to be whooped. He's ready to be whooped.
And Alan Foster has stopped it! Wow! That is going to be controversial!
But you really liked to stand toe-to-toe with him in the 12th round, even if you thought you won the fight.
It was on.
Did you like that?
I love you.
Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of the Boxing Coalition. My name is Cam, and joining me tonight we have my boy Daniel Lim. How's it going, Lim?
I'm good, Cameron. How are you?
I'm good, man. Like, I wanted to know, you know, it's almost been a week now since that Canelo fight. Has the erection died down a bit, or?
Well, you know what? I never got an erection to begin with, unfortunately, because of the DAZN fiasco with the UFC event. We'll touch upon that later, but I don't have much to work with, Cam.
Fair enough. Before we get into it, I just want to apologize for the people that like to participate in the Mixlr chat. Basically, Windows update plus driver issues equals fucked up. So it wasn't working. I apologize. The show's going to go out, but it's not a live broadcast. So we just have to make the most of it. So, Lim, let's just get into your ginger boy Canelo off the top. You were in the building as well. You managed to pick up some decent tickets. So, give us your view on the fight, please.
Just my thoughts on the fight?
Yeah, you saw the fight too?
Yeah, I saw the fight too. You know? Yeah, I mean, going to the fight live is always a different experience. I'm sure Cam, you can attest to that as well. Seeing Canelo live and versus just watching it on TV afterwards, but being in the arena, the venue was sold out, but I guess, like, for me, I couldn't separate the actual fight from, again, the disaster that ensued beforehand. So I'm sure you're aware, but we waited for like an hour and a half to watch the fight after the Garcia Duno fight. And it's always worse when you don't know how long you have to wait, right? So if you're given an option to wait between 2 hours where you know for a fact that you have to wait for 2 hours versus waiting for like what might be an hour, just that kind of like that lack of knowledge is what's the worst. And what's crazy is that in the lead up to the fight, I actually didn't see this, you know, when I was there, but I saw pictures of Canelo and Kovalev just taking a nap before the fight, which is insane.
Yeah,
you know, after warming up, after getting Vaseline rubbed all over your body, doing mitts. I mean, even for me going to the gym, like after I warm up, after I jump rope, like, and if I take a break afterwards, I'm fucked. Like if I take a shit after I skip rope for like 3 rounds, I'm done. Like my gym session is done. So I can't imagine what kind of adrenaline dump that is, you know, to not only, you know, put your shorts on, get your gloves wrapped, but having to, you know, actually hit mitts for a little while and then having to watch, you know, for Canelo, his stablemate get a first round knockout. I'm sure his juices were going, and just to be delayed by some kind of like arbitrary event. I mean, obviously the UFC isn't arbitrary, but it's completely unrelated to the sport. And especially if you're a cash cow, and this is arguably, you know, the second biggest boxing event of the year, arguably the biggest, I mean, for you to be put in that kind of position, I just think it's really disconcerting. And I know that doesn't have anything to do with the fight, but for me, like, that just left such a sour taste in my mouth.
I just found it shocking that they didn't maybe have a pre-prepared floater just to kind of throw in between. Obviously, they just must have thought that the Duno fight with Garcia was going to go long. But even at home, bro, like, I was getting bored. And, like, obviously, I was messaging you, you and Arena. And then you told me afterwards that, you know, the people at MGM actually contacted Dana White and asked if they could broadcast the UFC fight at their event. Man, that's a bad look. So you're asking a rival sport who have got a contract with a rival, what should we call it? Not TV. Well,
network.
We can
say network.
Yeah, another network. And then you're asking to play that on your at your event, like before your main event. That's a bad look.
Yeah, it's an awful look. Yeah, it's, you know, there's those age old, versus, you know, boxing versus MMA, which one's more popular. Obviously that's never an apples to apples comparison, but this on, just on this given night and given the fact that it was Canelo, the biggest cash cow in the sport, and just having to not know when the fuck he's going to go on. It's just such a weird feeling, and it's just DAZN in particular. I mean, I know they've been in the game for probably about a year now, a little bit over a year. But it just, there's something very hollow about DAZN events, in my opinion, both when I watch, on the app and when I go to events. I mean, I've been to two DAZN like fight courts now, and it doesn't feel right. And I'm not going to bash them too much because I think, you know, it's better having the platform that they have and the traditional pay-per-view model and whatnot. But it really fucked up the way that I viewed the fight, because even for me, I had an adrenaline dump because I got in the arena just when Garcia had that first round knockout, and I knew there was going to be a delay, but not to that degree. So, you know, like you mentioned, the fact that the MGM people had to call Dana White and ask him for his permission to air UFC 244, you know, which I think we can talk about later, just in terms of like which event was bigger. For me, it was no doubt Canelo was a bigger fight. It was a better matchup. And like to have that take away from what he accomplished that night was very, very disappointing.
But let's get into the fight itself, Lim.
Yep.
I personally, slightly disappointed, like usually before we do a pod, I rewatch a fight. And I didn't really have the motivation to rewatch this fight, even though the knockout, which obviously you're going to get to, was really impressive. The fight itself, mm-hmm. leading up to that point, man, it's kind of forgettable. Is that a fair comment from me, or you disagree?
Oh yeah, I thought it was a really boring fight, and it's. I mean, we can talk about Kovalev now, but for me, it wasn't. I think Canelo's knockout really hit the fact that this, for me personally, this was more of what Kovalev didn't do and what he failed to do versus what Canelo did do. Yeah, I think Canelo's gotten tremendously better since, you know, his earlier days. I recently, for some reason, I watched the Trout fight again. I saw the Lara fight again and the Angulo fight again, which provided me no substance. But the previous two fights really showed me and shed a light as to how much better Canelo has gotten just with respect to his punch output, and his variety of punching, and just the fact that I think he's just more cognizant of the fact that he doesn't have a very good gas tank. I think in those other fights, and Canelo still has the problem of taking rounds off, which he did in the ninth round against Kovalev, but I think he's smarter about that. And he's better at cutting off the ring. His footwork is still pretty shit when he comes forward, but he does do, like the left hook kind of like, as a way to make sure that the kind of the room for, you know, departure for your opponent is much more narrow, which I like. But regarding the fight itself, I didn't score it just because I knew as a Canelo fanboy that he was going to get the decision if it was even remotely close. And like you mentioned, the fight wasn't all that interesting up to the knockout just because Kovalev not only fought so tentatively, he fought like just a completely shot fighter, which I don't think he is. And it's really weird. Like, I've heard a lot of people say that you can't argue against Buddy McGirt's game plan if the majority of people had Kovalev winning. But first of all, Kovalev was winning by a very small margin if you were scoring for him. I think it's plausible to have it, a draw. I mean, is it insane to say that, or to think that Canelo was winning or was up on the scorecards?
I don't think it's insane. I did have Kovalev winning up until that point, but as you say, a lot of the fights were very close and marginal. Like, you could have went either way. I was just favouring output from Kovalev. But in a way, I'm so glad that the knockout happened, because the last thing I wanted after this was like, oh, Canelo always gets the decision. Just, you know, just another outcry from the Canelo haters. And don't get me wrong, I've got a few things to shit on Canelo in our conversation, and I'll leave that till later. But so often we get these big fights and we never talk about the fight itself. We always talk about some refereeing decision or some judging decision or something that happened. And I'm glad, like, this fight ended in a way that no one can argue, so we can just kind of move on with it.
Sure. I think it is fair, though, that the cards were pretty fair, it seemed like. I saw the picture of the three ring judges, and it seemed like, I think two of them had it for Kovalev, or was it one? I'm not quite sure, but it seemed like that was okay.
No, I think right. Two of them had it Canelo up, and then one had it a draw. I'm trying to find it on my phone now.
But Canelo went up by a round, right? Was it 96, 94?
Something like that. Just to make you aware, Lim, I don't know if you're using a hands-free, but sometimes your voice comes in and sometimes it goes out. I don't know if you're moving around or...
But... Yeah, it's just... I don't know. I think I'm just getting a little bit too excited. Every time I talk about Nello, my hands just go in very odd places. But going back to the scorecards, I think the two judges who did have it for Canelo had it for Canelo by a round. So.
Yeah, 96-94, 96-94, 95-95.
Yeah.
So it's not ridiculous. It's not like a robbery card.
No. And again, I think McGirt, you know, in between one of the later rounds, addressed the ringside reporter, the Mexican lady with the very short hair, who I find kind of scary. But he said that, you know, he felt that Kovalev needed to up the ante and do something, because he was allowing Canelo to control the pace of the fight. I mean, we hear that kind of verbiage all the time with boxing. Kellerman says it probably the most. You know, who is the person who's narrating the fight? Who's narrating the ebbs and flows, so to speak, of the fight? And I think Canelo was undoubtedly doing that for the majority of the rounds. And to me, like I said before, it was more of what Kovalev didn't do. I mean, I get the fact that he was jabbing and pawing his jab to fight on the back foot. But first of all, that's just not his strength. That's not his strongest attribute. And secondly, I don't care how washed you are. If you're allowing a guy to move up two weight classes to fight you, and you don't impose your authority and your inherent advantages at any point in the fight, that is just absolutely moronic. Because first of all, you know the history of Las Vegas judges giving Canelo the benefit of the doubt in these close fights, which you knew you were in at the moment, even if you thought you were up by a round or two. I mean, your own trainer was telling you that this was a very close fight and that you were probably behind on the scorecards. And secondly, like, you know that Kovalev, and he knows it better than anyone else, that he has a shitty gas tank, and he's older now. He has a drinking problem. He always fades away in the second half of the fight. And how do you take a breather every now and then? You got to get the respect of your opponent. And for him not to throw any kind of meaningful right hand in the fight, I know he clipped him with a couple of straight rights, but it just wasn't enough. And it was just too far, in a way, you know, between, you know, all the pity-pat punches that he was throwing, that it never really made Canelo fight in a different way. It just allowed him to fight however he wanted to. And we know that when Canelo has that, he gasses out less frequently than he does against a guy like Lara, where he has to kind of fight according to how his opponent is, you know, managing the ring.
Well, you perfectly answered the question I was going to ask you, which was, you know, if you were Team Kovalev, like, what would you have done differently? And I totally agree. I think with Usyk, you get tippy-tappy shots, but he mixes it up with shots that demand respect. And Kovalev needed to do that to Canelo. Like, he needed to show him, look, you can't just walk in on the inside. It's dangerous to get in here. And he didn't, man. He didn't, like, sit down on, like, a 1-2 or a reverse 1-2 at any point just to kind of demand a bit of respect. And, you know, Canelo just didn't show him any. Initially, he was kind of, like, looping in big hooks to the body from way outside, but after a while, when he knew there was no danger from the jabs or the right hand, like, Canelo didn't really need to take extra care to get on the inside. It was becoming a bit too easy, man. And Yeah, Kovalev, it was a weird game plan. I remember saying before the fight, oh, the fact that he's just fought Yard is a good thing because, you know, I'm still fresh, you know, I can do a shorter camp. And then after he loses, oh, the fighting Yard so close to it was a bad thing, you know, the camp was too close to the other one. It's just funny how people change one opinion from a negative to a positive or vice versa, man. But yeah, the excuses came pouring out, but I do have a bone to pick, and you know, we've had a phone conversation over the weekend, so you know what I'm going to say, Lim, but when the fight was announced, there was no talk of any type of rehydration clause, and suddenly on fight week, it popped out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to, it's just me and you, Cam, so I can't troll you like I normally would, and you know, have some third party take the grunt of the responsibility of speaking about the fight seriously. But you know, first of all, it's A-side tactics, and I don't condone A-side tactics. But it's really hard because I mean, you follow boxing more than any one of us, but even you follow it less than you used to, right? And
yeah.
I just think naturally, as you follow the sport less, you just stop following boxing scene on a daily basis like you used to. I remember one time when we were in Ireland and we were waiting for for our flight, I saw you checking nonstop boxing the forums for Clarissa Shields article, and that's when I knew that you were hardcore. And we probably don't do that anymore, and because this was kind of just like dropped on front door like the day of the fight or the day before the fight during the weigh-ins, I just was like, I don't fucking care anymore. It's like they're fighting, they made weight, so let's get it on.
And secondly, I'm not defending Canelo, but I do think the second day weigh-in is a little bit less egregious than just straight out weight cuts. It's a fucking pain in the ass, don't get me wrong,
especially for a guy like Kovalev who missed weight, I think who took an additional 2 hours to make the 175 limit. That means that after he weighs in, he can drink his water, but he's probably going to be limited to like nuts and small fruit and, you know, very portioned meals. Whereas in a traditional fight without the 10-pound imposition, you would just go to, you know, a steakhouse and order a fucking full on, you know, buffet 3-course meal. So that's a pain in the ass, and it extends the process of getting fluids back in your system. But at the same time, like I'm upset with it on principle, but I just don't think I don't know. I mean, I don't think it has much of an outcome. Otherwise, like, why would the IBF mandate it for other fighters, you know, in different championships? I know the IBF wasn't on the line in this fight, but it just seems like that's more of a health precautionary measure that can have implications on your performance, but just not to the extent of just pure, you know, weight training.
Hopefully, we still got a lot more years to watch Canelo, but when his career does come to an end, Lim, do you personally think that his resume will always have a few asterisks? Every fight you go down, you can say, but this or but that. Or do you think we'll just remember him as a great? Because I did speak to you on the weekend, and like, you look down his resume, and I'm not a pound-for-pound guy. Like, I don't like lists because there's too many variables involved. But when you put like some of the best fighters out there, like looking at his resume, he's definitely like the top guy for me. Maybe Usyk would be next, and then you can like Lomachenko in a way and stuff like that. Like I said, I don't do a number one, number two, number three, number four, number five. But yeah, man, his resume speaks for itself in modern day boxing.
Yeah, it's up there. But to address your first question, I don't think people are gonna look at the asterisks just because, I mean, I think the hardcores definitely will. You know, Canelo has a lot of haters. But man, like you can, the thing that I think I learned over the weekend, or not learned, but what I was reminded of after watching the Inoue Donaire fight is that you can pick apart people's resumes so fucking easily. And it kind of plays exactly into the fight last Saturday with Kovalev. You know, it's like, how washed do you think he was? I personally think he was washed, but probably not as much as most people. I thought, you know, Kovalev had a pretty decent shot of winning. I thought it was close to a 50-50 fight. But, you know, I can make that same argument with Manny's resume. You look at his welterweight and his junior welterweight fights, and most of the fighters that he fought were weight drained, or they were past their prime, or had really tough fights beforehand. So I think you could go down that list with anybody. But with Canelo, my only hope is that he doesn't try to kind of like pick and choose a weight class for the rest of his career. Because let's all face it, this Kovalev fight was very opportunistic matchmaking. And for me personally, I would like him to kind of find a division and try to take over the entire landscape. So become lineal at 160 or 168, preferably.
Lemmy, obviously a big Canelo fan, bigger than me, and you kind of stay in tune with his social media and stuff. But is it fair to say, like, he's got to a point now? Because some of the quotes I've seen and some of the written interviews, like, it seems like he doesn't give a fuck anymore. Like, I think initially he used to be upset that maybe the Mexican fans weren't giving him respect, or especially around, like, before the Golovkin fight when, you know, almost like Golovkin became the honorary Mexican. It just seems like Canelo's just that dude now. You know, he's on top of the tree and he just doesn't give a fuck what anyone thinks. He'll fight whoever he wants to and he'll do whatever he wants to and he doesn't care. Do you think that's a fair statement?
I'm so glad that you brought up the Mexicans, you know, the Mexicans for Triple G, because that was a bad look for whoever the fuck came up with those t-shirts and was a part of that band. Like, Triple G's a fucking pussy. Fuck Triple G. And I think you've described Canelo really well, is that he really does not give a fuck, which is, I think, I'm not, that doesn't excuse his behavior for stipulating that, you know, second day weigh-in limit or what else, or like his logic for not wanting to fight Triple G a third time just because he doesn't want to give a man his payday. Like, that's very petty, but I also kind of respect it because that's some real alpha male shit, and I always have respect for fuckers like that. So I'm glad that he likes to take on challenges. But yeah, I think you are kind of right. Like, you are seeing the side of Canelo where it's almost disconcerting from a fight fan if he allows his ego to take over the type of matchmaking that we want to see him in the future. Because I mean, his relationship with Golden Boy and Oscar De La Hoya is fucking shit right now. I think, you know, when I was there at the fight, I saw Oscar try to get close to Canelo after the knockout, and Canelo just wasn't having it. He didn't even fucking acknowledge him as a person, I thought was really interesting.
Do you have any insight to his contract and relationship with DAZN? Is it fully through Golden Boy, or at some point when his Golden Boy contract expires, can he still be attached to DAZN? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating question. Unfortunately, I have no fucking idea, and I doubt anyone fucking does either.
Fucking Oscar probably doesn't know.
Yeah, no, Oscar definitely doesn't know. He's the last person that you want to ask. But I mean, we've talked about it before, but I think the original tension came from the fact that Oscar promised Skipper, like the DAZN CEO, certain fights. That he was gonna fight Triple G for the trilogy fight at some point, and Canelo's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? Like, you can't make promises on my behalf, you know, when, so that kind of leads me to believe that maybe Canelo does have an individual contract with DAZN rather than through Golden Boy, but I really don't know. But again, that's just that ego of Canelo taking over again, where he's just like, you know, fuck you guys, I don't need you. Like, I don't want to fight these guys just because you want me to. And I think that aspect that you were talking about like the tension amongst Mexican fans is really interesting, because, you know, when I talk to people from Mexico, like in Mexico, you know, the people and even like people in his home country or his home state in Jalisco, like there's a lot of people who just don't like Canelo because they think he's a fucking diva. But to me, like, I just don't get it, because his resume is still like really legit. Because a lot of times what happens with these guys who have overinflated egos, they don't take on challenges like Canelo does, but it hasn't been a problem since. And I really, really hope that it doesn't become a problem in the future.
Well, that's a great segue, because my next question was, what do you see next? Now, obviously, he's between three weights. When he's asked about 160, he kind of grimaces, so I don't think he wants to put that type of wear on his body to get him down to 160 again. So do you see him going down and campaigning at 168, or do you see him maybe trying to unify against maybe Bivol? I know Bivol's kind of been calling him out and even said that he'll go down to 168, which I hate when guys kind of give someone the option. It was kind of like when Canelo said to Mayweather, yeah, I can do 152 or whatever, and it's like, don't give him the option, because he'll take it with both hands.
Yeah,
that's
no, I hear your point. I'm not a fan of that either, but just regarding the Bivol fight, I don't think that's ever going to happen because nobody gives a fuck about Bivol. You know, we've made him like a cult hero amongst our show just because I had a fetish for him when I first saw him at the gym. But outside of me, you know, I have odd perversion, so I doubt anyone else gives a fuck about him. Because, I mean, you look at him and you're like, is this guy Asian? Is he Russian? He's like some weird hybrid. So they're like, yeah, we can't fight. Have this guy headline. He's not going to draw any eyeballs. And he's not going to fight. He's not going to fight Beterbiev either. Because Beterbiev, like, I think Beterbiev is getting a little bit overrated right now. I actually think Bivol versus Beterbiev would be a pretty damn good fight. But I just think because of Canelo's style of and him not being very fleet-footed, like, if he has to out-physical Beterbiev, which I think he would have to do in a large portion of that fight, I think he's going to get fucked.
So a campaign at 68, like what fights would you like him to have?
You know what? I'd like to see him against you know what? The thing is, again, like, these guys just don't have enough pull, man. Like, I as much as I love Caleb Plant, you know, the IBF champ, or even Benavidez for that matter, like, these guys just don't have enough draw. I mean, so I think naturally your boy Callum Smith, I think, would be a pretty decent option just because of the potential to have a fight in the UK.
You think Canelo would come over for a stadium fight?
Yeah, he probably would. But if I was him, I'd ask for a little bit more money. Because I think the way his contract works, he's guaranteed like $37 million per fight. But if you're going to give up home field advantage and sell out a stadium, you'd probably want to ask for like $50 million, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. I just think Canelo, it's crazy. Like, well, now we're talking about 68. If you asked me 2 years ago, like, do you think Canelo's going to fight at 168? I was like, yeah, maybe once. But he's articulating to the media that that's going to be his next weight division, presumably. It's, to me, that's crazy.
Definitely, man. All right, I'm done on Canelo questions and anything regarding the fight. If you want to add anything else, Liam, go ahead.
Again, like, man, that fight was so disappointing just to go as a fan, bro. Like, shit, I can't imagine, like, if you came over like you did for the Khan fight and you had to, like, be in a very precarious situation of just, like, not knowing what was going to happen. It was really one of the weirdest experiences that I've ever had at a public event. Like, it felt like so arbitrary. I was watching a UFC pay-per-view event, like, not just a regular event, a pay-per-view event, like, while I was waiting for a boxing fight. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, it was a bad luck for boxing on DAZN, to be honest. But yeah, let's move on. We had an excellent fight yesterday, Lim. Final of the World Boxing Super Series in Japan between Naoya Inoue versus Nonito Donaire. A guy that we were both big fans of. I didn't expect it to be that competitive, Lim.
No.
Donaire did have his moments. Like, I had it, I think, 116-111. But I just enjoyed it from start to finish. Like, I rewatched it today and there were, like, some early and mid rounds that weren't too interesting, man. But it was a chess match at times when it needed to be. It was a slugfest when it needed to be. It had, like, flows of energy. It had, you know, like, of momentum. 1 minute, you know, in a way he's lighting Donaire up and then Donaire catches him with a left hook and then kind of shucks in a way. And, like, it was just a really fun fight. And then we had the 11th round where I don't know how Nonito survived that 90 seconds, man, because he was fucking, like, hurt to the body, hurt to the head, and, like, that 90 seconds seemed like a 3 minutes, man. It was just a really enjoyable fight. So far for me this year, it's been my fight of the year, just because the high quality level. Like, we're going to get into some of the other great fights we've had in the last 2 months, which we have, but a few of them were kind of sloppy, man. You know, guys are resting on each other's shoulders. It's kind of sloppy on the inside. A lot of missed punches. Danair versus Inoue, man, the accuracy was amazing. Both guys' technique was perfect. The way you see the replays with the right hand landing, it's just the perfect form. Like if you're teaching a kid how to box, they were just technically marvelous. And I've said this term before, a mirror match where both guys' stances and mannerisms are very similar, where the way they hold the hands, the way they do a half step jump forward, the way they do a half step way backwards, the way they kind of roll and dip, it's very similar, man. And I don't know, Lim, it was just really enjoyable for me, man.
It was a great fight, but don't you think you're being a little bit overblown by saying that their technique is marvelous and it's picture perfect? Because I personally think, like, I was kind of disappointed in Inoue's technique.
Wow.
I just think he doesn't set up his punches. Like, there were so many moments in that fight where I felt he could have stopped Danair had he just been more patient, and instead of just going for broke with every single punch, you know, throw a throwaway jab, maybe do what Kovalev did, just a tiny bit, just kind of throw stuff without bad intentions every single time so that your accuracy can get better. Like, when he did land, obviously the guy has incredible technique. He's a gifted athlete. But I still think technically he still has so much to improve, and which is totally fair because he's so young.
I don't know, Lim. I think he sets up his pinches pretty well. I understand maybe, yeah, try and like throw some throwaway punches to set up other punches, but the way he counters with the body shots and head shots, like, he mixes it up so well. He'll throw like a right hook to the body and a left hook to the head, man. Like, there's very few fighters that do that, and you think, why not? It's a simple combination, but guys will throw two hooks to the body and then tuck up, or the, you know, two to the body, two to the head, where him and I guess maybe Spence are the only other two that stick in my mind that do it on a regular.
What, a double to the head or a double to the body?
No, like a single to the body and then a single to the head, but with the opposite arm.
Okay. So what, like a left hook to the body and like a straight right hand, or a left hook to the head?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it makes sense because that punch is, you're so vulnerable to getting countered. Like, it's probably like the most prone or the most like vulnerable, combination punch you can throw in boxing. And it's so hard to get proper leverage, especially on the follow hand. Like, when you throw a left hook to the body, you're just not in a very good position to reset and throw a straight right hand. So, I don't know. I mean, speaking about Spence is a fucking idiot, but the Inoue, I mean, I'm just happy. I'm really happy for Danair. I mean, this is one of those fights where I think for me, I've become such a bitter cunt when it comes to watching boxing. Like, all I care about is pound for pound rankings and protecting, you know, Godinello and Synagogue against everyone else, when I should just take a step back and enjoy the fight. And Inoue is what, 21, 22?
Nah, I think he's older. Yeah. I think he's about 24.
Oh, shit.
26,
bro, 26. Yeah, you know us Asians, man, we never grow old. So, but I just think with Inoue, I'm so happy that he's gone this far, and you kind of forget that he fought at 112, like a couple years ago, maybe like even just a little bit over a year ago. So for him to go up, and even though Danair is shot, or not shot, but even though he's way past his prime, he's still probably one of the hardest punchers at that weight class. So for Inoue to have that ability to recover in the 11th round, you know, like he did, or was it the 11th or the 9th round when he got rocked?
When who got rocked?
Inoue.
I've got it on my notes here.
Yeah, my bad. I just think he's, such a gifted athlete that I could see him like doing a lot of things, but I don't think he would be well served past 122. I don't know, maybe not 122. I don't know who the champions are at 122. Is Luis Nery at 22 or 118?
Nery's at bantamweight, 118. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know. Like, I think 122 would be pretty risky, just because like if I envision like anyway moving up that much more, it's kind of difficult. But who knows, man. Who knows? But yeah, it was a great fight. Great fucking fight. And I'm glad that we got a fight that wasn't on a Saturday for once.
You're glad. Just to confirm, it was the 9th when Danair rocked him with the right hand, left. But just to just to go on one of your points, I don't think Inoue ever campaigned at 112. I think he started at 108 and then he skipped 112 and went straight to Superfly at 115. But just to correct you there. And what was my last point? 122. I think he can, man, because we know how much of a big puncher Dener is, man. And apart from the two times he got rocked, which he recovered very well, like, his chin is very good, man. And I'm just looking at the rankings at 122 now. So WBC champ is Roy Vargas. WBA have got their two belts. So Daniel Roman and Ronnie Rios. IBF is Daniel Roman. And WBO is Emmanuel Navarrete, the guy that beat Isaac Dogbo twice. So all three, four of those guys, like, I don't think Inoue would be out of depth with any of them, to be honest. Especially with, you know, Inoue, I don't know if you read on the Boxing Scene that straight after the fight that he's penned a deal with Top Rank, multi-fight deal. So he's coming stateside, and Uncle Bob has got a few super bantams, so I think it would make sense for him to maybe throw him in there.
Yeah, that might be the only time that it's actually like a kind of a smart decision to sign with Uncle Bob, because to me, Top Rank is just fucking boxing purgatory. But yeah, Donaire, Donaire, man, like, I have such a soft spot for Donaire. I think me and you both do.
Yeah.
And talent-wise, I think it's because talent-wise, man, like, bro, Donaire is one of the most gifted fighters I've ever seen. Like, maybe not in the ring, just watching him. Because I remember when I lived in the Bay Area, like, I would go down to the snack gym sometimes just to watch him train. And, like, man, the guy's fucking gifted. Like, he's so talented. Like, the way that he sets up his power punches is really incredible. But I think with him, his career got kind of, I don't know if derailed is the right word, but he wasn't able to maximize his potential just because I think he tried to fight at a weight class that he didn't belong at for too long. But even when I say that though, like it's crazy because when he fought Rigondeaux, I remember him and his camp was saying that a large part of the reason why he lost that fight was because he was like weight drained and like he had to run around Times Square like the night before the fight and or the night before weigh-ins to make weight, and like, and yet he's fighting at 118 at what, like 36 years old. Like, I just don't understand. Like, is that just shitty nutrition? Like, did you not have the right, you know, training regimen? Like, I just don't understand that. And it seems like he also wasted his career a little bit at 122, at 126 when he fought at a weight class that he was too small at. So it's just like, when you look back at his resume, I think he is the kind of guy where you can like point to 15-second YouTube highlight knockout reels of like the most devastating knockout punches for guys at the lower weight classes. But if you go through like a deep analysis of exactly like who he's fought and what he's accomplished, that probably won't, you know, give him the proper credit that he deserves.
I agree. I think before the Rigo fight, I definitely think, I don't know if it was his nutrition or like, do you remember when he was with the Garcia and like they were having like Skype training sessions and then he would go back with his dad and then he kept moving around. That's never a good thing. And also I think he changed a bit when he became a father and stuff. And, you know, I think becoming a father is a beautiful thing. You know, I hope to become one, in the next couple of years, but He definitely got a bit soft, man, and like his hunger wasn't there anymore. The last maybe 7 years, he's not been the same guy. And yeah, I hope he retires, man, because it was a great kind of fight of the year candidate. It's a great last fight to have, and you know, I think he's 37 next week, and like, why do you want to put more, you know, wear and tear on your body, man? You know, hopefully he's made good money and, you know, good financial decisions, so, you know, go off into the sunset with your retirement.
Yeah, and he's I hate to shit on him a little bit, but he's also not very smart. He's one of those guys where you talk to where he kind of like, you can tell he's trying to like talk like he has smart, like a wide breadth of vocabulary, but he uses words incorrectly all the time,
like me.
No, you're actually really good with that. But yeah, like I've talked to him a couple times in Vegas, and he's like saying words that, like, you know, like certain adjectives that just isn't the right word to use. I'm like, oh man, why'd you have to do that, Donito? You're such a great dude, but like, you don't have to kind of prove to me that you're something that you aren't. So anyways, yeah. Anything else, Cam?
Nothing regarding that fight.
Like what, 4 months since our last show? Since the Ruiz fight?
No, it was about 2 months. Yeah. We did one after Yad Kovalev. But
all right.
Should we get into L the True Spence and his flipping his Ferrari?
Did you guys talk about the fight too? The fight?
No, the fight happened afterwards. So what's your opinion on the fight first? Then we'll talk about his car accident.
It was a really fun fight, but again, like, I'm just such a boxing, like, kind of like elitist nowadays, where, like, for me, I always kind of vouch for Spence as being like, oh no, he's not just this, you know, flat footed, you know, body puncher. He's more than that. He's a skilled guy. And I don't think he really is all that skilled, man. Like, I think he's extremely disciplined. He knows how to stick to a game plan. And fuck, he's really, really durable. Strong. Like, there's just something about strong, man. I just think there's something about, like, Texas fighters, man, who just, like, can train in 110 degree heat and just, like, not blink twice. So I do think Errol is a fucking dog, but in terms of his skills, man, I just think he's too flat footed. He's too heavy on his lead foot, and he doesn't shorten up a shot as much as I'd like him to. You know, I think that's different between him and Canelo when they go to the body. Like, Canelo, like, if he feels like a punch isn't there, he won't throw it. You know, he'll kind of like cock back or throw a different punch to try to get a better shot. But with Errol, like, it doesn't seem like he knows how to make that last second adjustment. Like, if he plans on throwing a left hook to the body, he's going to throw it, even if the target isn't necessarily there.
Yeah. Even like Lomachenko, sometimes it looks like he's going to kind of loop it to the head and he'll change it last minute and bring it down to the body.
Exactly.
But yeah, I'm not going to shit on Errol too much because, you know, I still have nightmares about me saying that Erickson Lubin is a better version of Errol Spence, and I think that's going to haunt me forever. But yeah, I can't disagree with you. You know, he's very flat footed. It was a fun fight to watch. I missed it live. I was away, so I couldn't watch it live. I watched it the next day, and yeah, it was a firefight at times. It was sloppy as well. You know, both guys were kind of sitting on each other's shoulder blade, and it was a lot of shots where they're just throwing it to throw it. It wasn't look like they were trying to place him, especially when it came to Porter. Porter's like a guy that just wants to land on the target. He's not bothered about what part of the target. He just wants to land punches. And it's not a bad tactic if you're going to throw four or five punches, which he does. Because, you know, if two of them land, at least, you know, at least it wasn't in vain. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind a rematch. Having said that, there's a lot of other fights we can make and maybe have a rematch, you know, later on next year or maybe the year after. But yeah, enjoyable fight. I haven't got too much to say about it, to be honest. I had it close though. Like, without that knockdown limb, I would have had it a draw.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't score the fight, but I thought it was a very, very close fight. But yeah, you're right. I think the knockdown was what did it for Errol. But let me just ask you though, who are you referring to when you talk about exciting matchups for Errol, other than T-Bud, obviously?
I think the Thurman fight would be good for like 8 rounds until Thurman's body just breaks down and collapses on the ring apron.
Yeah.
Let me just make this point. The thing why I say that is because Thurman got to a point, and everyone noticed it, he got kind of comfortable. He was on top of the tree, you know, like a unified champion, becoming a bit of a sick note as well, keeps pulling out of fights with injuries and stuff, you know, getting married and stuff. He wasn't that same...
Tibet.
Yeah. He wasn't that same dude that was like KOs for life in San Antonio, you know, you know what I mean, San Diego. Sorry?
One time, Thurman.
Exactly. He's not been that same dude, and it does take a loss sometimes for someone to get a bit in between the teeth and take some criticism and want to climb back up the tree. And I think whether or not his body can hold up to it, I think he's going to want to prove himself now against either Spence or a rematch with some of the dudes he's already had. And beforehand, like, he's always kind of dismissed Spence. But in a few interviews I read after the Pacquiao fight, like, I could see him fighting Spence now. So let's hope that happens.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it's kind of sad because, like, I agree with you. Like, I actually do think the Thurman fight's going to be pretty good. But it's also kind of like, just because I don't think Errol's as good as I thought he was. But the thing I always forget too is that I'm like, oh fuck, Errol doesn't have too many fights. But the dude is 30. Right? So he's not young by any means. He's old. I think he's like the same age as Canelo, maybe even a year older. So, I mean, I think this version of Errol is pretty much like probably the best version that we're gonna get from him. And obviously with the car accident, I mean, who knows, man? Like, maybe that's gonna take a toll on his just his general, like, physical kind of like his reflexes and shit. Because I read something that, you know, he was like, yeah, just like, he posted some weird, like, Instagram picture where he just, like, didn't post anything but just wrote, I give up. So, I don't know. I'm reading way too much into it. But I just think, like, anytime you get in an accident of that degree, and it's also because you've been driving under the influence, it says more about kind of, like, I just think where you are at as a fighter. Like, not the accident itself, but more of, like, what led you to that accident.
Is it confirmed that he was with alcohol in his system?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was confirmed, but he got charged with it.
Oh, wow.
And if you look at the damage and you look at, I mean, I read the police report and you just kind of like match, the tire, the tread marks and how many times the car flipped and what kind of speed that would be required to be involved in an accident to that degree. I mean, it's like a 95% chance that he was intoxicated. So I'm pretty sure he was.
Well, I've got two strong points to make, Liam, and they might be long-winded, so go grab some water and a glass of water or something if you're thirsty, man. So the first point I want to make is...
I've actually been cooking, so go for it, my man. I'm going to go ahead and eat my food.
Okay. My first point is, I wish him all the best. I hope he makes a full recovery, which they are saying that, you know, like, he'll be totally fine, which is a miracle almost, especially, you know, getting ejected out of the car because the stupid ass didn't have a fucking seatbelt on. Like, first of all, that's ridiculous in this day and age, not wearing a seatbelt. But if he's under the influence, you know, if the guy's going to drink, like, you don't expect him to wear a seatbelt anyway because he's thick enough to drive and drink at the same time. So that's my first point. I wish him all the best, but I have no sympathy at all because where I live now it's a 20 mile an hour zone and you get dickheads just fucking bombing it down. We've got like two schools close to us and they just have no, you know, care about anyone else on the road. And the same applies to Errol. Like, if you've got a high, not even if you've got a high performance car, even if you've got just a normal Chevy Malibu or something, but you decide to drive it at ridiculous speeds, I have no sympathy if you crash that car and injure yourself. Because you are putting other road users at risk and other people. I know it's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's not going to be people walking down the street. It's unlikely. But there are people at work nights. There's people that are other road users and shit. So you're putting their life at risk just because you want to act like a dickhead in your Ferrari. So no sympathy. And the second point is, Lim, he just had that great fight of the year candidate with Porto. And a boxer's working life is pretty short. Like, if you break it down, like, a lot of them start when they're 7 or 8 years old, okay? They might take it more seriously when they get to 13, 14, might, you know, enter tournaments, golden gloves, stuff like that. So let's just say they, you know, train and eat healthier at 14 until they may be 34 because of the, you know, kind of retirement age. So that's 20 years, which is a long time, you know, to dedicate to something. Which I understand. But if you live till, you know, you're 80, 90, like 20 years was a kind of, short part of your whole overall life. So you need to be dedicated for those 20 years. You can't be blowing up in weight, getting fat. I thought Errol was going to be that dude that kind of goes against the grain when he gets a bit of money and fame and shit, but he hasn't. You know, he's just become like the same everyone else does, man. They go crazy, get all the iced out chains, start, you know, getting fat, you're not taking the game seriously. Like, you could disrespect Floyd as much as you want, man, but he didn't really drink, you know, and he was always in decent shape. He never blew up. He respected the game. And a lot of dudes don't do that. And the only person I could say maybe does that now is Devin Haney. He seems like a guy, but hopefully he won't maybe go down the path as well. But yeah, respect the game, put everything into it. I don't understand how, like, boxers, I'm not talking about Spence now, I'm just talking about in general. I don't understand how they can blow up in weight so much. We had a British fight a couple of weeks ago, Scott Fitzgerald versus Ted Cheeseman, and it was a really decent, actually it wasn't, the undercard fight was decent between Robbie Davis Jr. and Lewis Ritson, but the Cheeseman and Fitzgerald fight itself, it wasn't a great fight, but Fitzgerald's post-fight interview was very refreshing, man. Like, most of the time, just to give a background, what happened is people felt that Cheeseman maybe nicked it because he kind of boxed and moved it earlier in the fight, and Fitzgerald came back towards the end and, you know, tried to, like, put his will on Cheeseman, and he did towards maybe the last four rounds. I didn't score it, but if I had to give a decision, I would have maybe had a draw or maybe a Cheeseman win. So Fitzgerald was kind of lucky to get away with the win, and you can tell he knew that because he was kind of consoling Cheeseman afterwards, like, oh, you know, like, it's all right, man, we'll have a rematch or whatever. And in his post fight, he was saying, you know what, like, it's gone to my head. I kind of blew up a weight, but next time I'll, like, fucking, you know, I'll do better and blah blah blah, eat better and be in shape and stuff. And excuses, it's refreshing that he said that, but there's so many fighters, man, that don't respect the game. You know, you should be in constant shape. When you're not in camp, you should be ticking over, man. Like, so many of these dudes have to start fat camp, you know, for the first 1 month of their camp. They say, oh, I had a 9-week camp, I had like a three month camp. Yeah, but 4 weeks of that was you losing your belly fat because you were out partying and drinking and eating bad. Like, these guys need to, you know, treat the game with a bit of respect, stay in shape. 20 years of your life to dedicate, you know, and make money and have an early retirement. Most people would be buzzing if they could retire by 35 and never had to, you know, pay off their mortgage and that, but most people are going to have to work until they're 65, 70 years old. So you should kind of, like, be grateful that you got the skills and the talent to maybe get you into a position where you're a high earning boxer, so kind of respect it. I'm waffling on a bit now, Lim, so I think I'll shut up, but if you got anything to add, go ahead.
No, I agree with everything you said about Spence. I, you know, personally, I don't really give a fuck if I see him fight ever again. I mean, I'd want it if he does fight, I'll watch him fight, but for me, like, I agree with you 100%. When I see people just drive recklessly and be engaged in that kind of behavior, like any kind of, you know, physical damages that you undergo are entirely your fault, and I can give a fuck less whether you, I don't even really give a fuck whether he recovers or not, man, because that's just so fucking stupid. And it doesn't even matter what time of the day it is, man. Like, what if, you know, he went out on a weekend and there were people out and about where the fuck he was. So I just think he's a fucking idiot, and whenever I think of him and his clown ass friends like AB and Gervonta and the Charlo brothers, I mean, I just think of, like, that Chappelle skit. You know, like, we never should have gave you money.
That's a classic.
Fuck all those guys, man. They're all bums compared to Canelo, too, man. Like, I'm disappointed in all of them, man. You look at the Charlo brothers, you know, the Jamal's fighting some bum in Brooklyn. I'm not a bum, man, but, you know, I'm just kind of just saying that for the sake of it. He's fighting a decent guy, but he's been talking so much shit lately, and, like, he's fighting some random dude that fought Jaime Munguia in his last fight. Jermell's fighting Harrison, which is, yeah, that's a pretty decent fight, but he's a guy you should have, you know, swept the floor with when you first fought him. You just go down the list, man, like, Gervonta is fighting Gamboa. Like, are you fucking serious, bro? Like, talk about a wash fighter. That's the definition of it. And, I mean, who gives a fuck about AB? Like,
I wouldn't mind if he got an accident and just fucking offed himself, dude. Seriously, I wouldn't give a fuck. Like, I probably won't say anything, but I certainly wouldn't say, like, rip AB either if I had social media, because I don't give a fuck about that guy.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more, Lim, to be honest. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Golovkin-Derevchenko, another really decent fight. A bit like Spence Porter, got a bit messy on it inside, a bit sloppy, but fun. Overshadowed by the decision, I thought. I don't know if you scored it. I personally had Derevchenko winning. I felt really bad for him because I thought he dictated the fight so much. You know, he kind of put it on Golovkin. The body work was excellent. The feints and the slips and the rolls, man. I think he put in an A-star performance and was kind of just not robbed because it was close, but I really felt for him afterwards, Lim.
Yeah. How'd you score it, Cam? Even with the Golovkin knockdown?
Need to look at my phone. Give me 2 seconds. I think I had it 115, 112, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't score it either, man. I just thought it was, I don't know, like just my disdain and vitriol against Golovkin doesn't allow me to be an objective viewer anymore. I kind of just gave up on that guy, and now that he's fighting his IBF mandatory, who is like a name that you can't even like imagine making up because it's just so random. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I feel bad for Derevchenko. I know that was Kev's boy back in the day. But it's highly unlikely that he's going to get the opportunity to fight another big name. I mean, he's already gotten Canelo and he's already gotten Triple G. So, you know, like, what are the chances of him getting to fight another guy for another title anytime soon?
Yeah, it's a shame, man. I haven't really got much else to say. So should we move on?
Mm-hmm.
Gvozdik versus Beterbiev. It was a fun fight while it lasted. Like, you saw the way it was going to play out. Like, Gvozdik was kind of fighting scared, you could tell. The first two rounds I gave him, but the rest were kind of Beterbiev's, man. And it was like a lion slowly, you know, hunting down an antelope or something. Like, you knew eventually that Gvozdik was going to get stopped, and which did happen, but I had the feeling before the fight anyway, when I read some stuff about them meeting in the amateurs and Beterbiev stopping him. From the story I read, Gvozdik had injured his nose in the previous fight and he wasn't supposed to fight at the tournament that they were going to, but he was kind of just going along for the experience, and then one of the boxers on his team pulled out, so they said, oh, you know, you kind of replace him. So he went into the fight with an injured nose anyway, and then Beterbiev just beat him up. So when you kind of take a beating and shit, even though it was maybe 10 years ago, it does stay in your head. Like, I did have feelings that Beterbiev was living in Gvozdik's head rent free, and it showed in the fight. Like, he was fighting a bit scared, and I've always been a bit iffy about Gvozdik, because a couple of years ago he fought like a journeyman called Tommy Kopensky, and I think he got dropped in the end of the first round or something. And
Did you go? It was in Vegas, right?
Yeah, MGM. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there. Was it on the Frampton fight?
No, it was Crawford Postol on the card.
Okay.
And yeah, ever since that point, I thought, you know, this guy's, you know, is hiding glass. And I honestly thought Stevenson would have stopped him, but in that fight, he fought a great fight. And, you know, the best chins are the ones that don't get hit. And yeah, Stevenson just couldn't land on him, and he actually stopped Stevenson, which was impressive. And but I did feel, however, like just the brute force, just that kind of animal instinct of Beterbiev was going to eventually get to Gvozdik, and it did, man. But it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, that fight, I mean, like, Gvozdik is like, he has perfect technique. Like, if you ever, I've had the misfortune of bringing like a girl to a boxing gym before and trying to teach her how to throw a 1-2,
And like, I wish I just had Gvozdzic there to teach her, because he throws like the perfect 1-2 when everything is perfect and there's no adversity. But man, like, you're 100% right. When the fight started, you could just tell that Turby was like, yeah, I don't give a fuck whether I won the rounds or not, because I know I'm going to stop this motherfucker.
Yeah.
And to me, those kind of stoppages that Gvozdzic suffered, the ones where you actually don't even get knocked the fuck out, but you just like get dropped and you just get mollywopped around the ring and you get dropped 3 times, like, that's the worst case scenario for your confidence. Like, I can't imagine how difficult it's going to be for him to get his mind at that top level again. Like, I think that's like almost impossible. Like, it's worse than what's his face?
Lubin knockout, in my opinion. Because at least in a Lubin knockout, you just say, yeah, I just got caught.
But with this, like, you just got fucking dominated, man. Like, this guy just, like, showed that he's just a more of a man than you are.
I agree, but I totally give Gvozdzic, like, so much credit to kind of get in there with Beterbiev, knowing that he kind of got beat up by him in the past. This day and age, guys just, you know, hide behind mandatories and hide behind not unifying, and this fight just got made so easily. And like, normally you kind of read stuff about, you know, the negotiations are going well or not and stuff, and this one just came out of the blue, and I was pleasantly surprised when it did get announced. I actually kind of wanted to go to it, but if it was in New York, possibly, but because it was in Philly, I thought it's a bit, you know, a bit out of the way to go for a fight. But because I respect guys when they're at the top of their industry and they actually want to make fights happen. And yeah, I love unification fights with two of the best guys. We're going to get into another one in a bit, but that's the reason why, you know, I watch boxing, man, see the best versus the best, and respect to Gvozdzic to get in there against Beterbiev.
I agree.
Let's move on to this other unification fight that we had then. Going into it, Lim, we discussed it, and I actually kind of thought, you know, Prograis maybe would just do enough to beat Taylor, man, and I was a bit disappointed with Prograis, man. Like, before I get into what I thought, what you kick us off then, what was your thoughts on the fight?
Yeah, no, I was hyping up Prograis a lot just because, you know, whenever, like, there's an American versus a UK fighter, just kind of like push for the, I was troll, you know, like, for the American guy. But I had actually never seen Prograis fight, like, a full fight. Like, I've seen plenty of his highlights, and I always thought he was, you know, pretty good, a little bit kind of like sloppy, but also very unorthodox. And I thought that kind of style would give him pressure, would give Taylor pressure, especially after the Baranchuk or whatever his name is, the Russian dude that he fought.
Yeah, Baranchuk.
Who, I thought, like that guy is super basic. And when I saw Taylor struggle so much with a guy who I don't think is a very good fighter, I was like, okay, Prograis has got this. But you're right, man. Like, I don't know, like, if Prograis just, like, didn't. Like, it was just the size of the event that got him. And, like, he didn't look like he was, he didn't ever look like he was, like, in fifth gear. Like, he wanted to take the title away from Taylor. I mean, even though London isn't Taylor's hometown exactly, it's just still his territory. And I thought he would be more assertive because he's always been a pretty aggressive fighter. So, like, to see that kind of, like, reservation on his behalf was a little disappointing. I think Josh is, you know, like, I mean, obviously we have a special connection with him because we saw him fight. But I think he's a good fighter. I think he's one of those guys who's, you know, very talented. And when you watch him, you know, train and whatnot, you get a false sense of how technical of a fighter he is, because I actually don't think he's all that technical. I think he kind of resorts to the same kind of combinations usually.
Yep.
So, you know, I think him versus Ramirez would be fascinating, because I think Ramirez would be able to make Taylor uncomfortable enough to the point where he has to do something different than what he does in pretty much every single one of his fights.
Taylor reminds me of that friend you have who you play video games with that just does that same technique, whether it's like a sports game that, you know, he does the same thing over and over again, just if I can score a point and shit. And he has no adjustment. Like, I'm going to find it really interesting to see a fight with Taylor when the person he's facing can either move and box very well, or can outbox Taylor and the inside, I think that's where we're going to see the real Taylor then. Because I don't think he'll be able to make an adjustment, even though I thought he beat Prohge really easily. Prohge's not really an inside fighter. And, you know, Josh was kind of pushing him off with the forearm and on the shoulder, which was very naughty. He got warned about the shoulder twice. I thought maybe he could have got warmed a bit more, to be honest, because it's weird. It's like he doesn't want to fight a mid-range because I don't know if he feels vulnerable or I don't know what the reason is. But anyway, he prefers to get on the inside, but then he doesn't work on the inside. He pushes off or shoulder bumps off to create a bit of space to land his shots. Then I'm thinking, like, why not just take a half step back and try and land your shots? It's a weird tactic. And then doing all that kind of pushing and shoving and shoulder barging against Prohge, it's not a problem because he's a smaller guy. But against, like, Ramirez, who can out, you know, hustle you on the inside, that it's going to drain your energy, man. And I like Taylor a lot, but I think he's a one-man band. He's only got that one tactic, and if that doesn't work, I don't think he's got anything to resort to, man.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know him better than I do, so I'll take your word for it. But to me, when you watch Taylor fight, you're like, yeah, man, like he looks really like pretty when he's throwing his combination because he does have good technique, but like he doesn't really sit down on his shots really all that much. He doesn't really like, because especially his left hook to the body, which I thought was going to be like, which was the first thing that really popped out to me when I first saw him fight. Like, I actually don't think it's as impressive as I initially thought it was.
Yeah, that's fair. But just quickly on Prohge, I didn't mention that. The times Prohge was getting off first, he was having a lot of success. It's when he was waiting and like his upper body and head movement was excellent. It was making Josh miss a lot, but he wasn't countering. So, you know, you can make him miss as much as you want, but if you're not making him pay, then what's the point? But when he was getting off first, you know, they're the rounds I give him and they're the rounds he looked really impressive in. But a rematch, I think, if Prohge made the right adjustments, like I could see him winning a rematch. I had it 7-5, so it's not, you know, it wasn't ridiculously. I think also one judge had it a draw as well, so it was a majority decision. It wasn't a ridiculously wide a fight. A rematch would be excellent. And totally off topic, I know it doesn't matter, but it was a Sky Sports box office event, but it was the final of the World Boxing Super Series, and it was a shame that the event setup wasn't the WBS setup. Like, we didn't have the black ring apron, we didn't have the white ropes and all that, because since the, you know, the World Boxing Super Series came into be, like, I've always liked their events, man. I went to one of them in Manchester, and it just had a air of quality to it, and this final, it just seemed like a normal Sky box office event, and it just seemed like average, because we see these Sky box office events far too often now, especially like because Sky have nobody apart from Joshua. Like, anybody half good now is basically Sky box office. Like Lomachenko versus Campbell, even though Loma is, you know, my favorite active boxer, like Campbell's not a guy that should be on pay-per-view, you know. There's talk now after Katie Taylor fought recently that some of the big fights that she might have against maybe Cecilia Breckhouse or the rematch with Parsoon or Amanda Serrano, they might be on pay-per-view. They would have to pad up the undercard to make that pay-per-view, because as much as a Katie fan I am, like, that's not pay-per-view fight. No one's going to pay to watch women's boxing on pay-per-view. Like, when I look through my timeline, when Katie fights, when other women fight, the majority of people I follow have no interest in women's boxing. I know me and Kimo love Katie to death, but like, she's not a pay-per-view fighter, man. And this needs to stop, because, you know, pay-per-view is apparently dead in the States because of DAZN, but it's alive and well apparently in the UK, just because we have to pay less money than user. But that's beside the point, because the level of the fights are not pay-per-view fights. But there's my rant over, Lim.
Yeah, sorry, fucking man. Terrible.
fucking terrible. Right, let's move on. Last fight. I mentioned him in my last rant. Lomachenko versus Luke Campbell. I was at the fight. Need to big up my boy, Loco Mexican. He traveled all the way from Chicago with his friend Abe to watch the fight. His name is Danny. He's a really nice guy. We kind of knew him from the start of the coalition. He's been a friend of the show. He was always in the Mixler chats in the early days. And yeah, man, really nice guy. The fight itself, Lim, in the arena, I was a bit disappointed with Loma. I only rewatched it back yesterday just because, yeah, I was kind of, because I was there at the event, I was hoping that he might have turned up the screw a bit more, maybe got the stoppage. But when I rewatched it, like, Lomachenko did do enough. Like, in the arena itself, I thought some of his shots were landing short and Campbell's jabs were landing, but Campbell's jabs weren't landing as much on TV. And Lomo kind of dominated the fight. I just wish he kind of turns up the screw a bit earlier on and halfway through the fight. It seems he only does it towards the end. Like the same happened with Pedraza. He kind of gets the knockdowns close to the, you know, like the end of the fight, where it's almost a bit too late. The opponent's probably got enough time now just to kind of, you know, hang on to the 12th and, you know, finish on points and shit. And I over-criticise Loma sometimes, maybe because, you know, I'm such a big fan, I kind of put him on a pedestal. But I don't know. It was a decent fight. I enjoyed the event. O2 Arena, first time I've been as well. Very impressive. Like, Manchester Arena is kind of a shithole these days. It's pretty old arena. It's kind of built on an old infrastructure where the O2, if you've never been, it's inside the middle of the Millennium Dome. And on the outside of the arena, even though it's still on the inside of the Millennium Dome, you kind of got restaurants and shops and like a little mall and shit. And it's perfect for, like, if you're taking your partner or something, like, they can go shopping and, you know, you can go to the fights and shit, man. It was a very impressive setup, man. So I enjoyed the day. But that's about it from me, Lim. You got anything you want to add about the fight?
I don't watch it.
To be honest, you didn't miss much, to be honest. Like, the biggest takeaway was, like, the British boxing scene was, like, Luke Campbell did better than they thought, and that was the takeaway from the fight. So, you know, if people are saying you did better than you thought, then it's not going to be a great fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough for the UK fight fans right now, so I could see why that would sprout about after the fight.
Well, we talked about it the other day, and I had the same conversation with my friend who I saw. We went out for some food the other day, and we were saying that a couple of years ago we had like 12, 13, 14 world champions, and now I think we got like 4 or 5, man. It's British boxing's at a dire stage, and like, you look at the people coming up as well, like the last crop of Olympians, a lot of them have, like, you know, fell by the wayside or have not really gone down the direction that most people would. Like, the only people maybe you could say that has possibly got a chance to shine a bit is Bawatsi, but he's just in such a difficult division, you know, like heavyweight. Like, he would have to, you know, kind of wait it out until a belt became available, or he'd just have to go in there and fight one of the champions, which, as we were talking about before, you know, Bivol's a hard fight, Peterbiev's a hard fight, you know. It's difficult.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Lim, just before we get into the previews, as like the last show, you know, pretty with a heavy heart, we got to talk about another death in boxing, and this one kind of hit a bit closer to home because you mentioned Kevin Horn earlier, and Kev's was a friend of the show, and he was childhood friends with Sean Monaghan, who was trained by Joe Higgins, who also trained Patrick Day, who, you know, sadly lost his life last month. And yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, it's kind of happening too often these days. I don't know what to say, because we kind of say the same thing every time. It's a dangerous sport, but we do love it. And Joe Higgins, man, like, I read some quotes from him, and he said, you know what, I'm not going to train anyone ever again now. You know, I'm not going to put a kid through that through that situation where, you know, their life might be in my hands. And it's sad, man, because the amount of kids he's probably took off the streets and, you know, give him discipline and give him some type of routine and, you know, maybe take him away from some type of gang culture or something. He's definitely done more good than bad, but to have, you know, on his conscience now that, you know, a kid that he started to train when he was 14, you know, won Golden Gloves competition with him, and, you know, sadly he's no longer with him, and, you know, he's partly responsible for that, even though he shouldn't be, you know, because Patrick Day is a grown man. He wanted to be in the fight game, but it's sad, Lim. It's definitely sad, man. Our condolences to, you know, the Day's family and, you know, his friends, and, you know, we hope you rest in peace.
Yeah, man, for me, I'm just a cold-hearted son of a bitch, but like you said, with these boxers, maybe they go to the streets, maybe they pursue some different kind of life that isn't as enjoyable and as unique as boxing is, because, you know, being a professional fighter is, you know, obviously it's something that most people can't even fathom doing. So there is an assumption of risk. And, you know, maybe these fighters are just grow up in a part of the world where you can't really try to strive for anything else. So this is your way out. And it's just like, it's one of those things where it's happened so frequently. Like I don't want to be the kind of person that says like, oh yeah, rest in peace. Like, you know, we always, you know, are so sad for you and blah, 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 blah. But if you don't really mean it, and I know you mean it, but I'm just saying, like, a lot of other people, I don't think they really do. And every single time, you know, this thing kind of happens, like, it's just always the same kind of like fabricated response, it seems like. But for me, it's just, you know, fighters and boxers, like, they know what they signed up for, man. Like, you know, obviously it's a ruthless game, but at the same time, like, I mean, it's fighting, man. Like, it's fighting in its purest form. Like, you can talk about the MMA versus boxing. You know, what sport is more dangerous? To me, it's always been boxing, because it's just about punching the other person in the fucking face or the body, like the most vulnerable parts of the human body. So, like, that's why I love the sport so much, but at the same time, like, I'm not surprised at all, and I'm not going to try to, like, feign, like, you know, that I'm so kind of, like, shocked by these deaths, because they just happen so fucking frequently nowadays.
I respect your honesty. I know where you're coming from as well. It was like, I was so frustrated when Muhammad Ali passed away, because it was like every Tom, Dick, and Harry was just, like, posting, you know, RIP messages with pictures and all that, and I'm like, you probably never watched the Ali fight in your life. And the thing is, if someone wants to, you know, show respect, then you can't really shit on them, man. Even if it's just to be popular, man. Like, yeah, I was frustrated at the time, but then afterwards I thought, well, you know, at least they're showing respect to someone. It's better than them faking it or whatever. But anyway, let's move on. Do you want to talk about any news on that? I was trying to, you know, rack my brain about any big events apart from Spencer's crash and Fury going to WWE, which I could spend 2-3 minutes on, not because of the fight, just really, because of his decisions lately. You know, like the Otto Wallen fight was a very poor fight. I know the cut affected him a lot, but I was kind of at the stage after those two fights he's had now that, you know, he kind of deserved that cut, and maybe if it would have affected the Wilder rematch, yeah, you deserve it, because you're just milking money from the fans and just, you know, dragging us along for a couple of years just while you take the piss. So I kind of didn't have any sympathy when he kind of had that poor fight and poor showing against Wallen, because you put yourself in that position and now he's in WWE doing what he's doing. Like, I couldn't care less, to be honest, Lim.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about Tyson Fury nor Deontay Wilder, for that matter, until they fight each other.
Well, we're going to get into Wilder because he's in the previews, but is there anything else you want to talk about then before the previews?
Just the WBC, the whole franchise shit. I don't understand it. And it's, I mean, like Devin Haney knows, parading around as if he's like the WBC champ at 135 when I can't even name a single person he's fought.
WBC, bro. Something made me laugh yesterday, though. So after the Inoue Dener fight, you know, how the governing bodies always have a representatives and they dive into the ring to wrap their own belt around the winner's body or their shoulder or whatever. And Kale Sauerland had the, I don't know what WBC belt it was. I don't know if it was some type of interim belt or something, silver or whatever. But he tried to hand it to Inoue while Inoue was collecting his other belts. And Inoue just like waved his hand and said, no, thank you. And I think it's just going to become a great meme because it just shows you everything about how bad the WBC is at the moment.
Yeah, it's a joke, man. It's a fucking joke.
Fucking joke, yeah. All right, anything else, Lemmy?
Nope.
All right, the next month, I guess, boxing always kind of winds down. We used to get a really good card from Showtime or something, you know, like just before Christmas, but it's not really delivered this year. But we have got a few, so let's get into it. November 23rd. Lemmy is probably the next card that's decent. Wilder Ortiz rematch, which I'm not really too bothered about. Undercard is a bit better though. Undercard has Luis Neri versus Emmanuel Rodriguez, which is a really good fight. Brandon Figueroa versus Julio Cesar, which is a decent fight. But yeah, what do you think about Wilder Ortiz? Do you even care?
No, I don't, man. And it's one of those things where, like, I'm not even like shitting on Wilder necessarily because I know the first fight was really entertaining and stuff, but it's just like, I just really, this is one of the few times where like, even I think hardcore fans can agree that like, they don't understand this fight. And usually hardcore fans, like they'll always quibble about mismatches, obviously, you know, and just fights that really don't propel either fighter's career. And this fight really isn't that because even if, you know, Wilder, for example, just dominates Ortiz, like that's a pretty decent name on his resume, but like, I really don't understand this fight, and like I'm shocked that it's taking place 2 days before Thanksgiving, man. Because I thought this fight was like, I didn't even know this fight was signed.
Yeah, it was weird. Initially, they were supposed to have it in Vegas, and there was delays. It didn't get fully announced, and then it just went quiet. And the next minute, oh, it's happening in. This one is Vegas. No, I think it's going to happen at Staples. I think it's supposed to happen at the Staples. I'm not sure if this KSI Paul Logan fight kind of fucked this fight up and they had to move it or something like that happened anyway. But, yeah. We've had this fight once before, you know. I wish to God Luis Ortiz just catches Wilder with something and just stops him and just fucks up their rematch. Sorry, Wilder and Fury's rematch, man. I just want something like that to happen, just to fuck up their plans that they made. Because, you know, they had a secret agreement to go off and, you know, fight a few fights and make a bit of extra money before their rematch. There's no doubt they had a secret agreement, so fuck them.
I agree, man.
But, just quickly on the Neri fight. Yeah, man, Neri's a fun guy to watch. You know, he kind of has his asterisks because of his it's fucking PED testing and that, but you know, he reminds me a bit of Khan in the sense of he kind of goes in head first and he's vulnerable because in fights before he's been knocked down and he gets up and he continues in that, but he is vulnerable to getting caught. And Rodriguez, man, even though, you know, in a way, he kind of beat him up for 3 rounds and stopped him. You know, he's a very good fighter. And I could see this being like fight of the night. I'm looking forward to this more than anything else on the card. So hopefully it'll live up to it. But the same night in the UK, Lemmy. So Saturday, November 23rd, we got Callum Smith versus John Ryder. Decent fight. Like, Smith's kind of been in the wilderness since he... since he won the World Boxing Super Series last year. He did have a fight in between, just a run out against Hassan Ndam. I think it was on the Joshua AJ card, if I remember correctly. But yeah, no one really gave Ndam a chance in that one. But the fight against Ryder, it's a very decent competitive fight, hopefully. Anyway, Ryder's had a resurgence, really, in his career since he went from middleweight to super middleweight. I don't know if it was maybe a weight problem or whatever, but he seemed a different fighter. He had one blip against Rocky Fielding, which was one of the worst fights I watched, where this Fielding just grabbed him every time he came close, and luckily got away with a decision, but it was a sloppy, horrible fight. But since then, you know, he stopped Patrick Nielsen in a 50-50 fight, stopped Jamie Cox, and he had two other decent wins as well. So, pretty good fight. Should be competitive, hopefully, and we'll see. Undercard-wise, from the top of my head, I don't think there's anything too decent. So, anything to mention on Smith and Ryder Lim, or should we move on?
I'm always wrong.
Sorry, like, your mic's not clear, bro.
I'm just marveled at how you guys come up with these guys as Ryder and Cheeseman and fucking Fitzgerald.
Bro, at least they're memorable names, isn't it?
I know. No, I'm not really shitting on it, man. I just like think of like some of the Hemingway books that I read about like the UK in the 1920s, man. It's beautiful.
When I hear Ryder, I always think of that Tupac song, My Ambitions as a Rider.
I know. So I always think of it like spelled like R-Y-D-A-H.
What else we got? All right. I don't think we'll do a show before this. And apologies to Chemo because he'll probably want to give us 2 cents. So let's talk about Joshua Ruiz rematch. It's kind of slowly creeping upon us. It's almost we are a month away, Lim? Yeah,
man. I was tempted about going to the fight, but I know my boy Canelo's going to be there supporting Andy Ruiz, so that kind of got me thinking for a little bit. But Ruiz looks good. I've seen some pictures of him training. Now that he's back in California from Guadalajara, it looks like he's dropped about 10 pounds, so that should help with his hand speed. I don't really buy into the logic that, oh, like the increased mass helps you absorb punches. Like, I think only people who've never fought before say stupid ass shit like that, man. Like, get the fuck out of here, dude. How stupid do you have to be to think, literally, you're arguing that extra body fat, which if you've ever seen those pictures of like the wax figures of what fat looks like underneath your skin, like, you really think that's gonna help you absorb punches? Like, it's not like a fucking pillow
Bro, you know, it's like extra protection though, bro.
Like, sure, I guess, like, I don't want to say scientifically, but like, just logically speaking, it is something else that's there to remove yourself from the punch, but to think that that's gonna have any kind of drastic impact? I mean, come on, man. And obviously the benefits you get of just being in better shape, being able to go longer rounds and being able to throw probably faster, you know, slightly faster punches, I think far outweighs any kind of benefits you might get from cushioning punches by being fat.
Well, how do you see it playing out?
To me, this isn't that hard of a fight to call, man. Like, I've always picked Ruiz. I thought there are certain fights that you watch in their original fight where you think, oh, like, you know, boxing to me is never really a fluke. But you think like, oh, okay, like if this fight happened 10 times out of 10, I do think the opponent would have won 7 times. This just happens to be one of the 3 times that the underdog won. But I think Randy Ruiz is just a better fighter, man. And like, I don't want to impede too much on what you're going to have to say, but I know you've mentioned that you could see AJ knocking Ruiz out, which I can too, but like you banked that on the fact that he would have to catch him early with something very substantial, and obviously that can happen. This is heavyweight boxing, but I just think Ruiz's advantages over Joshua are just so obvious. You know, like Joshua's never had like a very snappy, quick authoritative jab. It's very kind of like, it's powerful, but it's not snappy. And against a guy like Ruiz, who I just think has incredible hand speed at that weight division, like Joshua's jab is so slow that I think he can counter against it almost like, you know, somebody would throw a right hand or their offhand at you. So it's like he has enough time where it really doesn't make a difference. No matter how much distance that AJ tries to use against him and trying to avoid him, I think Ruiz has pretty good foot speed, and obviously his hand speed is probably the best of the division. Like, I just think he's going to catch AJ with something big. And we both know that once AJ gets hurt, he becomes an entirely different fighter, man. Like, you forget about his, you know, eight pack. You forget about his Adonis like body figure. You just see like this dude who looks like fucking Bambi out there in the boxing ring.
Yeah, you kind of like answer what I was going to say on my behalf. Like, initially, Lim, after the first fight, I thought, you know what, I could see, you know, if they fought 10 times, maybe like 5 each. But since then, like, when I've seen AJ's, they had this interview with Sky, Anna Woodhouse, or whatever her name is, and she was asking questions about that night and stuff about, you know, conspiracy theories and that, and the way he was answering, man, like, he didn't seem right. And I definitely think Ruiz is in his head. Like, I think he has like flashbacks to like being dropped, and I think it's more the embarrassment. Like, you're this Adonis, yeah, and you get basically dropped multiple times and stopped by this fat dude who you were supposed to beat quite easily in most people's eyes. And I think that nervous energy is going to eat him up on the night. Like, that first 3 rounds, he's going to be stiff as hell, and then he's going to gas.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and then he's going to gas. Such, I mean,
like, sorry, I'm so sorry to cut it, Cam, but just think of like the most like hollow, like soulless place to fight. Like,
dry heat.
Saudi Arabia, man. Are you kidding me? Like, Jesus Christ. But yeah, my bad. Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about like the lack of, yeah, sweat, you know, stiff as a board.
Yeah, I just feel that it's a dangerous tactic, but the only way I could see Josh winning is like impose himself for 3 rounds and just try and go for the knockout. But it's dangerous because if it doesn't happen, you know he's going to be gassed by the 5th round.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of coin toss. Like, and I can't see his team inventing a tactic and strategy around a coin toss. They're going to have to kind of have something a bit better than that. But that's the only tactic I see working against Ruiz. I think if you try and take Ruiz down the deep end of the fight, it's going to be more beneficial for Ruiz, to be honest, because we know how badly AJ gasses. And although he does have, you know, second wins in that, what if he doesn't get it that night, you know? What if he gets, you know, dropped early and just is totally gone by the 5th round and never has his second win? So yeah, I'm going for Ruiz, man. I think Ruiz beats him again, stops him again a second time.
Yeah, man, AJ just like he's not a good like fundamental boxer. Yeah, like if you recall his fights, man, like when he throws a jab, it's just like, I just think he kind of gets away with it because he's so like powerful that even if his jab technique isn't that good, he's just such a strong dude that like it still gets the respect of his opponents. But I think what we also forget too is that when Ruiz first got dropped with that right hand, like I think most people thought the fight was over because that was a very, very clean right hand. And I'm sure most people wouldn't have gotten up from that shot. But I just think Ruiz has a really, really good punch.
Did he drop him with a left hook, wasn't it? I think he hit him with a left hook.
Was it a left hook?
Yeah, because I remember saying after the fight, what happens if he lands a clean right hand on him in the rematch? It might be different.
So did Ruiz drop him with the hook as well, or was it the right hand that dropped?
Yeah, I think Ruiz dropped him with that left hook that hit his temple and made him go all robotic.
Right. My bad, but I'm just saying, yeah, the first punch that dropped Andy in the third round was a really, really clean shot that I didn't think he was going to get up from. So I just think Ruiz has a fucking good chin. And like you said, Cam, if Josh can't get up, like, forget 5 rounds, like, I'm thinking like
three rounds. If he can't get him his attention and his respect in three rounds, I think it's Ruiz to take.
Obviously, you're not going to know, but what do you think his team's tactic is going to be? Because that's the only tactic I can see, Lim, like, trying to blitz him early. Like, I can't see him. Like, look how bad Joshua was when he was trying to box off the back foot. Like, he looked absolutely terrible. They can't, they surely can't have that same tactic, can they?
No. Definitely not. Oh, my bad. It was, you're right. I'm looking at the highlights again. It was the right upper cut. And then the hook afterwards that caught Age or Ruiz. But that, even then, that was a super, super clean shot. And no, you're right, just with respect to the technique and shit. He's like the worst body to have in boxing. Like, not only is he like super thick and muscular, but most of that is his upper body. And his legs, I just don't think are like quick enough to deal with all of his upper body mass, and he doesn't know how to box, man. That's why it's so amazing that he's gotten this far, because he's not a good boxer, dude. I don't see it.
Crazy, man. I'm looking forward to it, just because it's going to be fun either way, so.
Dude, it's crazy, man. It really is, like I hate to minimize the importance of this fight, but I think, like, to this day, I think most of mainstream media are just so attracted to this fight because it is one fat dude versus some guy who looks like he should be Mr. Olympia, you know?
And to
like,
this day!
It's so interesting.
Shit, undercard-wise, though, Lemmy, undercard's pretty whack, man.
I still can't believe it's based in Saudi Arabia, man. I still can't believe it's taking place in Saudi Arabia, bro.
Yeah, it's crazy. But Povetkin versus Hunter, which is not a bad fight, Michael Hunter. Scott Quigg's fighting John O'Carroll, no one cares. And Filip Hrgović is fighting Eric Molina. And that's all that's penciled in so far on BoxRec. So it's pretty whack that they only got four fights penciled in 1 month before. But that's Eddie Hearn, you know. He'll put some more people on it against TBAs or a guy that's fucking two weight classes upper than he should be. Fighting last minute. Same night, Lim, in New York. You touched upon this fight earlier. Saturday, 7th December. Jamal Charlo versus Dennis Hogan. It's interesting. We had a conversation last week and you're kind of off team lines only. Is that fair to say, Lim?
I am, because they're so fucking stupid, man. Like, it's, I mean, I like their energy, man. I just like people who are like that brash and have that kind of confidence, but you gotta back it up, man. Like, you can't be all lying to only shit and go to a draw against Tony Harrison and then fucking barely beat some guy. Who was the guy that Jamal fought in the same night in Brooklyn? Like some Russian guy who's never done anything with his career? Like,
yeah,
gotta
well,
back that shit up, man.
And De La Shea fought Matt Karabov, who's fighting on the undercard of this upcoming fight as well. And then in between he fought Brandon Adams, which he didn't really look good either. And it's just, yeah, it's true, man. Like, if you talk so much shit, you have to back it up, man.
Yeah.
And I actually think, you know, Hogan's a bad style matchup for them, you know. Like, against Munguia, he boxed and moved and he did it for 12 rounds. Like, he's not a puncher. Like, he's more of a tip-tap guy, but, you know, they're scoring punches. And Jamal and his brother, both of them are kind of flat-footed. They don't really move that well. So, I don't think it's great matchmaking, Lim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why I'm not that mad at the fight, like I said earlier, because I actually, like, luckily, just by complete chance, I watched the Hogan-Munguia fight, and I know Hogan isn't, you know, some kind of joke, he's not some kind of washover, but he is coming up from 54, right, so he's fighting Jamal.
True, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a decent fight, but again, like, what the fuck is Jamal doing? Like, bro, you've been talking about a fucking title for so fucking long, and you haven't done shit at 160, man. Like, when was that Centeno fight, man? Like, after the incredible fight against J-Rock, like, you move up to 60, you have a good knockout against Hugo Centeno, which, you know, who I like, obviously, but he's not a good fighter.
you knock him out in two rounds, and you've done fuck all with your life ever since then, man. It's a joke.
No, it's crazy, man. It's like, I'm slightly going off topic, but I seen a tweet from Javonte saying after Taylor won the fight against Progre, and he was like, after 135, I might go up to 140 and fight Josh Taylor. And like Taylor, like one thing about Taylor, he's a bit, yeah, he's a bit crude, man. He starts now quoting tweets and just shitting people on Twitter, man. He's a Twitter warrior as well, in a good way, not in a bad way. But that's the thing about a lot of this crop of boxers, Lim. Like they're thinking and talking about two steps ahead. It's like you're fighting fucking Gamboa, washed Gamboa, and you're talking about what you're gonna do in 2 years. It's like, fight someone good now. I seen a quote from Ryan Garcia as well, Lim. He said next year I'll fight Linares and someone else, and in 2021 I'll fight Devin Haney. And I'm like, motherfucker, Linares will probably stretch your ass, and you're thinking about another year down the line. It's like these guys, I don't know where their heads are at the moment, Lim. Like most of these guys think they're better than they are, and they've not done anything to prove it.
Crazy. Yeah, I'm not a fan of any of these, like lower. Like I'm not a fan of Haney. I like Teofimo because I know him personally. But if I didn't know Teofimo, I'd probably fucking hate him too, because they're all just annoying as fuck, man.
But what do you think about Teofimo, Richard Camus? That's a good fight, man.
That's a really good fight.
You favor Teofimo?
I do. I know he didn't have a good outing against the Japanese guy, and Teofimo is. I think he's also. He probably has a pretty questionable gas tank. When you're as explosive and fast twitched as Teofimo is, you're going to struggle against guys who have incredible shins and who can just take your shots. Like you just see, like after a certain amount of rounds, like those explosive counter punches, those counter right hands just don't have the same kind of velocity as they do early on in the fight. So it's going to be a good fight. I mean, Comey's super durable, obviously, but I just think Teofimo was a little bit too athletic, but I think it's going to be a really close fight. I think it's going to go the full 12, and I wouldn't be surprised if Teofimo wins like by 7-5, 8-4 decision, just because I think the judges are going to be more impressed by his flashy punches than Comey's like more traditional, you know, 1-2s and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. That's a week after the Joshua one, so hopefully we'll kind of preview that a bit more after the Joshua fight.
That's the one where it's Crawford versus Mean Machine, right?
Yeah, Kavalaskis.
Like they literally have that on the poster. They don't have Kavalaskis' last name on it. They just have Mean Machine.
I'm not surprised, to be honest, because I think I made a butchery of his surname as well. So, but that fight's out a month out, and there's only just two fights listed on BoxRec, just Crawford and him and Comeyan versus Lopez. It's kind of common to see these days. But just going back to the Charlo Hogan card, Lim, there is a decent undercard fight. The return of Chris Eubank Jr. versus Matt Korobov. Not a bad fight.
No. I don't know, Kim. I have nothing to say about Chris Eubank Jr.
No, that's fair enough. I think BoxRec have got it listed as middle, though, so I don't know if Eubank's going back down to middle, or it's just a mistake, but I guess we'll find out closer to the time. That's about it, Lim. I haven't really got anything else to talk about, because fingers crossed we'll do a show, post-fight show for Ruiz Joshua 2, and then we can get into more predictions for the rest of December.
Cool, man.
Great to conversate with you, Limmy. You sound super happy.
Yeah, I'm ecstatic. I have to write a fucking thesis paper until midnight, essentially, so I'm fucked.
That's because you're doing too much partying these days, bro. You need to, as I've told you in the past, you need to knuckle down a bit in this semester.
I know, man, but I got it good, brother.
I'm going to become a real estate tycoon in a couple of years. So, well, maybe not a couple, probably 10 years actually. I'm going to be licking a lot of ass and sucking up to a lot of people for a long time. But, oh well, I hope it's worth it.
It will be, man. When you're a billionaire, it will be.
Yeah. Just let the people know that we're going to Brazil in February. The carnival season. It's going to be lit.
Yeah, man. Coalition meetup in Brazil. Hit us up. But, yo, Lim, sure. Thank you, man. Always a pleasure to conversate with you.
All right, man. Peace.
Peace, Limmy. Thank you to all the people that listen to the show and download it on a regular basis. We'll be back after Joshua Ruiz 2. Peace.
You just listened to the Boxing Coalition.
I did. Man, I love boxing. I fucking love boxing.
A big shout out to the Boxing Coalition.
You're a newbie.
No, I ain't new, man.
If my fucking next door neighbour became the number one flyweight in the world, you know what I'd do? I'd fucking walk past the cunt.
Derek, how you doing, bro?
I was physically banging, blood.
I disagree.
First time I hear the show, man, it was fucking badass.
Vamos, Argentina, la concha de su madre.
I see the bomb in them.
I get home and she's like, what the fuck? Me and the kid are here. Why don't you get home and talk to us? I'm like, man, you guys don't know shit about boxing.
Kel, how does it feel to be the new IBF champion?
Feels great.
Do we really dive into the black hole right off the jump?
I think he's hiding glass.
Just to play devil's advocate.
You want one portion of crow or two portions of crow?
Give me two portions with a supersized fries and a large drink, please.
I can't stand them, what? I'm Scottish.
Fringe side?
But you won't crush Anthony fucking fat ass Joshua, would you?
He's not fat. Yeah,
how about you tell us what you weighed for your final thoughts?
My weight?
Thank you for listening to the Boxing Coalition.